from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Next pitch. Friendly off his glove. Horner's going to reach. That should be an error. Toward third, Bobble coming home. Bad throw. A run scores. And here comes Griffey. He'll score. And Hubbard in the second. Virgil at third. He might have hit a double play going around second. To third. Oh. Bobble. Friendly is having an awful Sunday afternoon. The fans here, there might be 10 or 12,000.
Now the payoff.
Oh, it's gone. Bob Friendly is going to win the ball game. How do you like that? Boy, you talk about a schizophrenic day. Bob Friendly made four errors in one inning. Home run number 14, and the Giants win it 7-6.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Man, it's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Sean Sears, our producer. I'm hearing those Bob Friendly errors as we welcome Bob Friendly into Hit and Run on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. And I'm like, what are we doing? We're playing errors from a man's playing career to welcome him in? And then we get the home run as he wins the game. And Bob, thank you for the time. Good morning. A schizophrenic day for Bob Friendly. You remember that day, sir?
Do I remember it? Are you kidding me? It's hard to forget it. I mean, in my own defense,
yes.
I was in the lineup as a catcher that day. I'm sitting in the dugout probably 5 minutes before game time. Roger Craig, my skipper, came over and said, hey, you're going to have to play third today. Chris Brown hurt himself during BP, so I take off my gear, I borrow a glove, I go down and play third base. What can go wrong? And then every ball was hit to me that inning. I actually had a line drive that ticked off my glove and went into left field. And in hindsight, I wish they would have given me a fifth error, because then I would stand alone in the record book.
Oh.
As it is, I'm tied with some other stiff that made four errors in one inning.
Oh, my God. But then you win it with a home run. My goodness. It's crazy. Was there more of a willingness to just, you know, put dudes out there and let them figure it out back in the day, Bob, perhaps?
I think so, a little bit. You know, nowadays you look for a utility guy that can play multiple positions, and usually it's not your backup catcher. So, you know, I volunteered. I played a little left field, played a little right, a little first, a little third, but obviously, I made fewer errors behind home plate, which is where I should have been all the time.
Yeah, you know, I want to talk about the Diamondbacks and the Cubs and baseball a little bit, but I remember Bob Friendly getting introduced at the All-Star Game in 1984, a year he got MVP votes. Tell me about Scout Bob Friendly as the catcher for our listeners, please, if you would, sir.
Well, I certainly couldn't keep up with these guys nowadays. I was, you know, the old school, sitting in a crouch and get your rear end up off your heels as the pitch is being delivered. And, you know, framing was not even a consideration back then. You tried to make borderline pitches look good, but, you know, we didn't have courses to teach catchers how to do it. So, yeah, we just kind of did things on the fly. As far as throwing behind the plate, I was a little out of the mold of Thurman Munson or modern-day Patrick Bailey. I didn't have a directly over-the-top throw. I didn't have proper footwork, but I did get rid of the ball quickly, and I was usually pretty accurate. So my caught stealing numbers were pretty decent.
You got a pretty good one there in Arizona. Gabriel Moreno.
Yeah.
Did he deke Seiya Suzuki? Was that the little league deke that I thought it was when he like kind of paused between first and second and Seiya threw behind him and then he took the extra base and scored on a single thereafter?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. After watching the replay of that particular play, I think that's exactly what he did. He kind of chopped his steps a little bit and dropped his head like he was going to stop. And he was way around the bag at first. And you know, to Suzuki's credit, he thought, man, that's an easy out. I'm going to throw behind him. And then Gabby took off for second base. And I'll tell you, he is a really, really good player. You're going to hear a lot about Gabriel Moreno moving forward.
Big-time prospect from Toronto that came over in a really interesting trade for Dalton Varsho and others involved in that deal. The Diamondbacks, you got your ball club's playing well. What makes this team tick the way that it does, Bob?
Well, you know, they coined a phrase, embrace the chaos last year. We've got a lot of speed on the roster, and last year they ran the bases like crazy. Every time, you know, one of the burners would get on base, they'd steal second, the catcher would throw the ball into center field, the guy would end up at third base, and then an infield ground out would score a run. And they're not quite as aggressive as they were last year on the bases, but they still put pressure on you from the lineup top to bottom. They've got a little more thump this year. They've got Gino Suarez and Jock Peterson and Randall Grichuk, which has taken away some of that chaos running game, but it's still there. They're very alert, heads-up base runners. They play great defense, and, you know, it kind of all depends on the pitching, and right now three of our starters are on the injured list, and we expect them back soon. So, you know, everybody's keeping their fingers crossed for a big bounce back in the second half.
So what makes Torrey Lovello good at his job? I like the way that he communicates publicly, that's for sure. But what makes him good in your mind?
Well, I think he communicates to the players the same way. You know, you talked about old school baseball compared to new school. Torrey keeps talking about how much they love each other and have each other's back. My first manager in the big leagues was Frank Robinson. You'd have to hit 5 home runs in the game to get a smile out of Frank. You know, he didn't want to be your buddy. He didn't want to be your friend. He may love you. He may not love you. All he cared about was your performance on the field. And, you know, Torrey kind of understands that if you have a tough day, go 0-for-5, punch out a couple times and hit into a double play, that's when you really need your skipper to come over and put his arm around your shoulder and tell you it's going to be all right. But that's kind of the way the game is going.
Yeah, it is. If you don't have these days, Bob, if you're not that guy, you need at least one, maybe two of those guys on your staff, don't you? You need some touchy feely. You need some laughing. You need some fun guys. Like, do you need a mix of personalities? Tell me about the thought process of putting together a coaching staff. Like, does somebody have to be the red ass? Somebody have to be the good guy? Not that you necessarily do it intentionally, but you want a good mix of personalities, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you want your coaches to be very good at what they do, whether it's a hitting coach or a pitching coach or a base running instructor, whatever the case may happen to be. You want the best you can possibly get. But that being said, you need a sheriff. You need somebody who'll kind of keep things in line. You need a bench coach to kind of stay on top of the game moving forward because it happens so fast. And, you need somebody to be their friend. And, you kind of look around to the guys you played with, the guys you played against, and you know their personalities and how they fit together. And that's quite an art to put together a coaching staff. Sometimes you're just handed guys from the previous regime, and usually it takes a couple of years until you figure out whether they fit in or not.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the question right now about Craig Counsell, your former ball player, wondering if he's got enough of his own mix and wondering if this coaching staff has enough of its own mix. Because this Cubs team doesn't, I don't know, they look a little lifeless at this point. Bob, what do you see as you watch them play?
Well, I'm not going to speak to Counsell and his coaching staff.
Sure.
You know, I'm not sure of all the circumstances there. I just know that Craig Counsell is a real good baseball guy, and he is going to figure things out, no doubt about it. It just seems like the Cubs, offensively, which is a big surprise because in the years I was here, that was what the Cubs were all about, you know, other than the Mark Pryor, Kerry Wood era and later on Zambrano. But they were always slugging. They were always hitting home runs. And this year, the offense just seems to be sputtering for the Cubs. One guy will get hot, and two guys will get cold. And then those two that were cold get hot, and 5 other guys go cold. It's just tough. It looks like it's just tough to sync everything up offensively.
Yeah, it is. And regardless of the coaching staff, and I don't know what it is, but I know that watching this team right now, you know what we played in the first segment? We played you from 2011. Calling the Cubs a dead-ass team. We played, it's 13 years old, Bob, but it has not lost its relevance in this town.
This has been a dead-ass team.
2011, sir. 2011. And it was just like, we all think of it sometimes when we see a team that just, it doesn't seem to have a little life. That can happen to a ball club, can it?
Oh, sure it can. And it happens all the time. Even to this day, it happens to very good major league teams. They just kind of hit a lull in the season. And, you know, unless you have the right guys, veteran players to help pull you out of that lull, it can last for a long time. And, probably not the greatest words to use on the air there to reference a team, but, you know, at the time I was just as frustrated as a fan. You know, that's the thing. We sit up in press box and watch a game. The fans sit in the bleachers and watch the game. And it's completely different when you're down there in that dugout and guys are battling against the best in the game. And it's hard to stomach sometimes, but, you know, that's what makes us fans.
Yeah, no, it does. And I tell you what, that language works for us here at the radio station. If nowhere else. It's an interesting thing. Corbin Carroll, man. Did you notice yesterday was four straight changeups to Corbin Carroll in his third time through the order? The way that pitchers are limited now, and like the way they freak out anytime they get the order for the third time, I get frustrated. I feel like they just tell pitchers, all right, just throw your best pitch. Just throw your best pitch. What happened to changing speeds? What happened to mixing it up and trying to mess up with the timing? Instead of just coming back with four straight changeups to a guy like Carroll, who eventually just goes yard.
Which is really surprising for those of us who watch him every day. He's had a lot of problems with high fastballs. And, you know, to see him get those off-speed pitches, especially hittable off-speed pitches, you know, if you throw it off the edge of the outside corner, down near the dirt, he might swing and miss it. But, man, that was a hanger right in the middle of the zone. And, you know, it's just the analytics of the game, all the computer printouts we have, all the video work that the coaches do before the ball game. I think sometimes we overthink the game. I mean, I think back to my managing days. If I went out to take Curt Schilling or Randy Johnson out of the game so they didn't have to face a hitter for the third time, we'd probably still be out there fighting.
Yeah, but it all goes together, right, with this idea that you're better off with the reliever in the fifth or the sixth or the seventh and the eighth, and all you're better off with this, like, endless cavalcade of relievers, and starters aren't even trained to hold stuff back and have something special for the third time through, or let alone the fourth time through.
That's a really good point. I caught a guy named Mike Kruko, who broadcasts for the Giants now, does a tremendous job. And Mike was a four-pitch guy. All four of them were average at best, but he would usually save one. Like, he might throw a lot of fastballs, changeups, and sliders early in the game, and then the third time through the order, he'd start dropping curveballs on guys. You know, he would watch what guys did in their first couple of at-bats of the game and then adjust in the third at-bat. It was quite an art for a starting pitcher to be able to work his way through that lineup a third or fourth time, but it was expected. Nowadays, I don't think it's expected even at the minor league level. You know, they're so worried about monitoring pitch count and, yep, you know, not going over a certain number. And I think that's maybe a little overplayed in the game nowadays.
Yeah, I don't know how you put the toothpaste back in that tube. I really don't know. I want it to happen. Maybe you limit the roster. You know, you got five relievers. That's it. You know, I don't think the Players Association would go for that, but that's one thought on how to do it.
Well, scary thought is having that many, or, you know, the way we have it nowadays with all the relievers, and take away the three batter minimum rule. We'd be playing 6-hour games now. You know, it would be crazy.
Yeah.
You know, the way Tony La Russa used to manage a bullpen, you'd be playing all night long.
Yeah.
So, some of the things have changed for the better, some not so much.
Bob Brenly with us here on 670 The Score. All right, Bob, I like to do this with certain guests along the way. I call it your baseball bona fides. I got three questions for you, okay?
Okay.
All right, here's one. Who is one of your most favorite players in the game? Could be from the past. Give me a player that you absolutely loved and why you loved them.
Well, this might shock you, but Craig Counsell.
Really?
You know, on that 2001 championship team, we had stars all over the field. Gonzo in left, Steve Finley in center, Reggie Sanders in right, Gracie at first base, Matt Williams at third. I mean, we had really good players. But if we didn't have Craig Counsell, I wouldn't have been able to do the things I did over the course of the season. We could plug him in at third, short, second. He volunteered to play first base if we needed him over there. And you could hit him lead off, you could hit him eighth. It didn't matter. And he was such a student of the game, he would question me all the time. And I loved that. And you could see early on he had a future in the big chair.
That's awesome. What is the best game you ever had a chance to see in person as a fan, Bob?
Wow. Man.
Yeah, right?
I've seen a few, so it's kind of hard to figure out the best game. Probably that four-error game hitting the game-winning home run. It's a kind of a race to four errors. I don't know if it gets much better than that.
No, maybe not. And then what's one thing you would change if you were a commissioner, Bob?
Well, I would suggest that all the general managers and team owners and managers, for that matter, look in the dictionary under uniform. I mean, our colors are Sedona red and desert sand, and we got guys wearing lime yellow shoes and orange shoes and pink sleeves, and I don't know. I just don't like the look of it. It just looks like a pickup game somewhere when guys are not dressed alike. I want to see everybody look alike in their uniform when they're playing the game.
You know what? There's something to be said for it. Then there's the All-Star Game uniforms. I don't know what the hell those things were, Bob. A friend of mine said it looked like guys were crossing guards in the Applebee's parking lot.
Well, I don't mind it for the home run derby and the festivities pregame, but I think, like a lot of fans, I want to see my guy wearing his uniform. I want to see the uniform that I root for.
Yes. Hell yeah. And you're trying to, like, make people know what teams these guys are on. You're trying to promote. So go ahead and do it that way.
Sure.
Absolutely. All right, Bob, thank you so much. Yeah, you bring the guitar? You got a guitar in the hotel room on this trip?
Yeah, I always bring my guitar. Sure.
God love you. What's the song that you're playing along with lately that you think you're sounding pretty good, at least in your headphones?
In my own head, I'm working on Aqualung.
Oh, yeah.
And Nobody's Fault But Mine by Led Zeppelin.
Hell yeah.
But mostly I just strum chords, you know. I got a setup so I can put my headphones on so nobody hears me, and I can play along to music, on my playlist, and it's entertaining, and I can entertain myself.
Sitting on a park bench, I'll come over and help you out.
All right, Matt.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate you.
Talk to you again.
All right, that's Bob Brenly. You see him in the hotel room, blasting along with Zeppelin, hanging around.
Jethro Tull with Bob Brenly. Hell yeah,
Jethro Tull and Led Zeppelin with Bob Brenly in the hotel room. I'm in. Let's go. Oh, very nice. Let's go and let's talk about these damn kids with their bright yellow shoes. That's right. What's Geraldo Perdomo doing over there at short? I'm gonna write a song about these fluorescent yellow arm sleeves. Can't do it. Take off your yellow arm sleeves. 670 The Score is where you are. Hear from a couple more Hall of Famers, and we'll check the lineups before we get out of here for Cubs pregame coming up in a little bit on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
I'm very thrilled. Like I said, elated to be on the ballot and ecstatic to get in. So it was a shock to me, to be honest with you, a little bit, but I made it, very fortunate, and, you know, this is a place that's very difficult to get in, and you don't get there alone, that's for sure.
That is Jim Leland, who has made the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, and will go in tonight, or this afternoon, I should say. That's a speech I would look forward to, and Jim Leland, we'll get to your calls, by the way. Got a couple of phone calls we'll get in, and we'll get you the lineups for the ball games today, as well as it is indeed Hit and Run on The Score and Cubs baseball. The Cubs take on the Diamondbacks this afternoon in the series finale from Wrigley. Pregame coverage starts at 12:45, first pitch at 1:20 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. Jim Leland was a guest on Inside the Clubhouse just after he had been elected, I should say, to the Hall of Fame. Today's the induction. And he was talking with Bruce Levine and David Haugh about when he knew that he would be a big league manager.
You know, Bonds and Drabeck kind of stand out in Pittsburgh, obviously. Florida, you had Sheffield, you had Kevin Brown, you had Al Leiter. Colorado, this is kind of ironic. If Todd Helton gets in this year, he'll be joining Larry Walker and myself, two people with the Rockies at one time. So you know, on and on and on. Detroit, of course, Miguel Cabrera, Magno Ordóñez, Placido Polanco, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer. I could go on and on and on. You know, I've just been blessed to have so many great players. But, you know, in my heart, I feel just as good to have had the other players, because it's all about one heartbeat and a team. And I think there is also a fine line between enough stars and one too many. So, you know, I think that I'm appreciative of all the players I ever had, and that includes the minor league players.
That's Leland on the best players he ever managed. Hell of a list right there. Here's the cut on him about when he knew he would be a manager.
Well, I don't know that I ever got that far, but I think what happened to me was I started out rookie league and A-ball and then to double A, and then didn't do a good job, got sent back to A-ball, and then the next time I missed double A, and they sent me to triple A. And when I got to AAA and started managing against guys like Lee, Tony La Russa, Jack McKee, and several others that, you know, managed the big leagues or were going to manage in the big leagues, I felt like maybe I got a chance to be a coach. I still wasn't sure I was ever going to get a chance to manage, but I felt like, well, you know, if you can hold your own with these guys, maybe you at least got a chance to be a coach in the big leagues. Unfortunately, you know, Tony went to the White Sox in the middle of 1979 when he was at Des Moines and I was at Evansville. And a couple of years later, when he needed a third base coach, I believe Bobby Winkles went to the front office. Tony gave me the call, and that was the start. I've said this all along. Tony La Russa didn't make me a manager, but he definitely made me a major league manager.
That's pretty cool. And Jim Leland, supposedly an incredible third base coach, and then went on to be an incredible manager. The White Sox, at one point, had a baseball brain trust emerging of Dave Duncan, absolutely brilliant pitching coach, Tony La Russa, Hall of Famer, Jim Leland, Hall of Famer, Dave Dombrowski, impending Hall of Famer. They were all there working under Roland Hemond, and then Hawk Harrelson became the GM and fired the whole lot of them. All of them. Sent them on the way. Other than that, it was a good run for Hawk. White Sox, by the way, play against the Kansas City Royals today. Drew Thorpe going for the White Sox. He's a fun one. I like watching Drew Thorpe. Fam, Sheets, Robert, Vaughn, Jimenez, Eloy in that lineup again. Brooks Baldwin at second base. Kid who looks 18. Is not 18, but boy, he looks 18 or perhaps 17. Nicky Lopez playing short today. Nick Senzel, the newbie, at third base. And Corey Lee is your catcher. The Cubs will play against the Diamondbacks today. It's Brandon Pfaadt, the righty, on the mound for Arizona. Shota Imanaga, the lefty, the all-star, on the mound for the Cubs. Cubs line up with Nico Horner and then Michael Busch. Seiya Suzuki is your designated hitter. Ian Happ, Christopher Morel at third base. Mike Tauchman out in the field playing right today. Dansby Swanson, your shortstop. Tomas Nito is your catcher. And Pete Crow Armstrong, your center fielder and your number nine hitter. To the phone lines we go. Desmond is on the south side. It is on 670 The Score. What's up, Desmond?
Hey, Spiegs. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday, sir.
Yeah. So finally broke down this year and paid the blood money to the Ricketts for the Marquee app. So finally been able to watch some Cubs baseball this year. And going through that run before the All-Star break, I felt like I couldn't even enjoy the games when they won, because we saw what this team was before that in the losing streaks that they've been on. And watching the last out last night, I had a Dennis Green moment where it was very much, they are who we thought they were. And I'm just resigned at this point for them to hopefully sell and just try to improve for next year, because this team just is not talented enough to make any type of run.
You know, ouch.
They have that winning streak early this year compared to last year. So we got that out of the way, and we don't have that excuse to not sell that we saw last year in the failed wild card push. I really hope that we have some opportunities to build more prospects and talent in the farm system and maybe shine a little bit more light on how Jed just doesn't know how to spend the payroll that he has.
Thank you, Desmond. That's a rough, rough reality that caller's living, and he's not alone. I think these two games have really broken a lot of people. They've really broken a lot of people, and that broke him last night. And I've noticed a change in the tone and the reaction and the tenor of Cub fans, even just today, when I really get a chance to be plugged into you folks on a Sunday morning. And it has felt very different. And I understand there's big picture questions of the way that the team is built. That run before the break of winning 8 out of 11, I think of what Greg Brown told me from the Pirates broadcast booth a couple weeks ago. I was talking to him, and he said, the structure of the game itself and the structure of the season means that even bad teams will go on a run. That even bad teams will go on a run, and things will look up. And you wonder if that 8 of 11 is just, you know, the dying gasp of a bad team going on a run. Because here we are, two games into the second half, and woof. It is also a much better team in the Arizona Diamondbacks, showing you for the second year in a row what a better team looks like. They play crisp. They play crisp defense. They run the bases well. They're aggressive. They've got a really communicative and emotive manager. Seems to work for them and works in the modern game. I think something's a bit rotten on this Cubs team. Something is amiss, and I have theories as to the humanity of it. And my theory, one of my theories, has been that this bunch knew they needed more help than they got. That these players knew they needed more help than they were given in the offseason. And what they were given was Shota, which is cool, and Michael Bush, which has turned out to be cool, but it was Bellinger just returning. There wasn't a lot more. And you, the fans, knew they needed more. I believe the players knew they needed more, too. And then as the season wore on, and in Jed's words, 2 weeks became four, became six, became eight, feel like they kept knowing they needed more. And they go on the field these days knowing they don't have enough, that they're not good enough. And I feel like I've seen that humanity play out where they get down and it doesn't feel like there's a chance to come back. Rough, rough, rough stuff. This is Walt in Deerfield on 670 The Score. Walt, good morning. Thanks for holding. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, sir. I've got a couple things on my mind. I don't know what time permitting, but the first and maybe the most important is, you want to try to equalize some of the apparent inequity between hitting and pitching. I was a coach for 20 years. I suggest you take the ball and increase the circumference 1/64th of an inch.
Hmm.
Just enough so when you throw the ball to the plate, you have a little more resistance, might slow it down, 1 or 2 mph, and all those just missed swings that the hitters hit, that 64th of an inch might just put that over the top to get a hit, to get this, to get that. And it wouldn't be something so cataclysmic that would hurt the pitcher's arm, it would hurt this, it would destroy the integrity of the game. You're just trying to tinker with it and make it a little bit more enjoyable. That's what I would start. I'd start with the 64th. Maybe you need a 32nd, but I'd start with a 64th and see if that would work.
That's interesting, Walt. Let me ask you, though, what would that do to pitchers in terms of their musculature, in terms of the physicality of it, in terms of their arms and their comfort level and all that? Any idea?
Yeah, I would not change the weight of the ball. Just make it a 64th of an inch bigger. So you don't want to put any more stress on the pitcher's arm. Yeah, and just by doing that, you'd have just a hair more resistance to home plate. And also, again, you give the hitter just a little bit bigger target to try to swat. I try it in the minors. If it works, you can tinker with that even a little more. But as long as you don't increase the weight of the ball, you shouldn't be hurting any arms.
Thank you, Walt. Appreciate it. Man, people are scrambling and scuffling to find ways to fix the offensive inequity, or the inequity between the offense and the pitching, I should say. Yes, he wants to increase the size of the baseball. Had a wonderful moment yesterday in the afternoon on a glorious Chicago summer day. Took my boy out to the park over there in the South Loop, brought the bucket of balls and a lighter aluminum bat for the young man. Have my wooden bat I got from Louisville Slugger, but he wanted to use the metal one. I think, you know what? He likes the way it sounds. He likes the way it sounds when it hits the ball.
I respect it.
And I've got a bunch of different balls in there. There's some hard balls. There's some wiffle balls, which can be a hoot. there's a bunch of T-balls. So it's like the hard ball, but it's just a little softer. And then there's some full-on rubber balls. There was even a tennis ball. So it was just a wide array of different effects. One of the T-balls was starting to fall apart, and he had a moment where he hit it, and it broke apart. He literally hit the cover off the ball. The cover was spinning around, windmilling in the air. And he said, "Daddy, look, look." And I allowed him to think that his power was so majestic that he hit the cover off the ball.
Just being a good dad, man.
Just letting him feel that, you know? And then at one point he hit a tennis ball, and that one got some distance, and it bounced, and it went behind a bush. And he's like, "It's gone, Daddy, you can't find it." And it was out of the park. Literally hit a tennis ball out of the park. I let him feel those things. He's not actually as good as that, but I let him feel it. I mean, and maybe it's because he's been such a competent call screener this year, working as the associate producer when he does. You know? But I
did a really good job of making sure we weren't talking to the crazies.
Yeah, well, yes, he's weeded out some of the crazies. Sometimes he weeds out people he shouldn't weed out, though.
That happens. That's okay. He's new. He's learning.
I know. He's got to check in. You got to check in every once in a while, because I like a couple of crazies. I'm good with crazies.
We have fun with some crazies.
Yes, but yes, Texter, I immediately thought of The Natural as well. He's never seen that movie. I need to show him The Natural. Some heavy stuff early on, but. You know, some wonderful stuff. And it's funny, I was reading about The Natural and thinking about The Natural. If anyone doesn't know, the book is a very different kind of vibe than the movie. In the book by Bernard Malamud, a really, really terrific novel, Roy Hobbs, you know, is a cipher for all sorts of different American ideas and sort of, you know, very important figureheads in the history of America. What Roy Hobbs represents is a much more layered kind of thing. I mean, I guess that stuff is in the movie as well. But what you need to know about the book, if you don't, spoiler alert, is that he strikes out at the end of the book. He does not hit a home run that magically destroys the lights and creates a fireworks effect and makes people weep with triumphant music that has been used for decades in inferior situations. That was a bit of Hollywood movie making and a big change to the end of the story. The novel is quite gorgeous and quite sad, actually. I'd recommend reading it. The only problem is you'd probably end up feeling like you do as a Cubs or a White Sox fan.
This has been a dead-ass team for the better part of 3 months to start this season.
Yeah, you know? I mean, imagine how you'd feel if you struck out in a moment like that. Texters are not happy with Walt's idea to add 1/64th of an inch to the baseball.
He could have seen that one coming.
Well, you know? But I genuinely, I have no idea of the physics of that.
Right, that's what I was saying. Like, I have no idea how that impacts. It sounds like a good idea, but I have no idea.
Yeah.
Let's call Rob again.
It goes back to Sean's text to me last night, about 10:30, maybe 11 o'clock. I'm sitting there watching The Bear with my wife, and I get the text. It says, "Baseball sucks, dude." And I thought, you know, look, I know he's a Cub fan. I know he's having a tough time this year, but baseball doesn't suck, Sean. The teams might. The season might for your particular team, but baseball does not suck. I'm sorry that it felt that way. I recommend that you take a 12-year-old out to the park and throw baseballs to him and let him hit the cover off one and see the face light up at that point. I recommend that. You can't have my 12-year-old, though.
I wouldn't dare.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd want to hang out with me for that long.
No. I don't know. He enjoys you on a Sunday morning. Thank you so much to Sean Sears for doing a great job producing the show. Thank you to our guests on the show today, Bob Brenly and Rob Friedman, the pitching ninja. Really enjoyed talking to both of them. Go back on the Odyssey app if you missed them. Fun interviews, fun conversations. Got baseball bona fides from both of them. Thank you to all the callers and all the texters for being here as part of Hit and Run on a Sunday morning into the Sunday afternoon. Cubs baseball is next. Back with you tomorrow with Parker and Spiegel. And remember, Tuesday, me and Danny live on the field at Wrigley before Cubs Brewers. Have a great day, everybody.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Next pitch. Brenly off his glove. Horner's going to reach. That should be an error. Toward third. Bobble coming home. Bad throw. A run scores. And here comes Griffey. He'll score. And Hubbard in the second. Virgil at third. He might have hit a double play going around second. To third. Oh. Bobble. Brenly is having an awful Sunday afternoon. The fans here, there might be 10 or 12,000.
Now the payoff.
Oh, it's gone. Bob Brenly is going to win the ball game. How do you like that? Boy, you talk about a schizophrenic day. Bob Brenly made four errors in one inning. Home run number 14, and the Giants win it 7-6.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Man, it's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Sean Sears, our producer. I'm hearing those Bob Brenly errors as we welcome Bob Brenly into Hit and Run on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. And I'm like, what are we doing? We're playing errors from a man's playing career to welcome him in? And then we get the home run as he wins the game. And Bob, thank you for the time. Good morning. A schizophrenic day for Bob Brenly. You remember that day, sir?
Do I remember it? Are you kidding me? It's hard to forget it. I mean, in my own defense,
yes.
I was in the lineup as a catcher that day. I'm sitting in the dugout probably 5 minutes before game time. Roger Craig, my skipper, came over and said, hey, you're going to have to play third today. Chris Brown hurt himself during BP, so I take off my gear, I borrow a glove, I go down and play third base. What can go wrong? And then every ball was hit to me that inning. I actually had a line drive that ticked off my glove and went into left field. And in hindsight, I wish they would have given me a fifth error, because then I would stand alone in the record book.
Oh.
As it is, I'm tied with some other stiff that made four errors in one inning.
Oh, my God. But then you win it with a home run. My goodness. It's crazy. Was there more of a willingness to just, you know, put dudes out there and let them figure it out back in the day, Bob, perhaps?
I think so a little bit. You know, nowadays you look for a utility guy that can play multiple positions, and usually it's not your backup catcher. So, you know, I volunteered. I played a little left field, played a little right, a little first, a little third, but obviously, I made fewer errors behind home plate, which is where I should have been all the time.
Yeah, you know, I want to talk about the Diamondbacks and the Cubs and baseball a little bit, but I remember Bob Brenly getting introduced at the All-Star Game in 1984, a year he got MVP votes. Tell me about Scout Bob Brenly as the catcher for our listeners, please, if you would, sir.
Well, I certainly couldn't keep up with these guys nowadays. I was, you know, the old school, sitting in a crouch and get your rear end up off your heels as the pitch is being delivered. And, you know, framing was not even a consideration back then. You tried to make borderline pitches look good, but, you know, we didn't have courses to teach catchers how to do it. So, yeah, we just kind of did things on the fly. As far as throwing behind the plate, I was a little out of the mold of Thurman Munson or modern-day Patrick Bailey. I didn't have a directly over-the-top throw. I didn't have proper footwork, but I did get rid of the ball quickly, and I was usually pretty accurate. So my caught stealing numbers were pretty decent.
You got a pretty good one there in Arizona. Gabriel Moreno.
Yeah.
Did he deke Seiya Suzuki? Was that the little league deke that I thought it was when he like kind of paused between first and second and Seiya threw behind him and then he took the extra base and scored on a single thereafter?
Yeah. I would tend to agree with you. After watching the replay of that particular play, I think that's exactly what he did. He kind of chops his steps a little bit and dropped his head like he was going to stop, and he was way around the bag at first. And, you know, to Suzuki's credit, he thought, man, that's an easy out. I'm going to throw behind him. And then Gabby took off for second base. And I'll tell you, he is a really, really good player. You're going to hear a lot about Gabriel Moreno moving forward.
Big-time prospect from Toronto that came over in a really interesting trade for Dalton Varsho and others involved in that deal. The Diamondbacks, you got your ball club's playing well. What makes this team tick the way that it does, Bob?
Well, you know, they coined a phrase, embrace the chaos last year. We've got a lot of speed on the roster, and last year they ran the bases like crazy. Every time, you know, one of the burners would get on base, they'd steal second, the catcher would throw the ball into center field, the guy would end up at third base, and then an infield ground out would score a run. And they're not quite as aggressive as they were last year on the bases, but they still put pressure on you from the lineup top to bottom. They've got a little more thump this year. They've got Gino Suarez and Jock Peterson and Randall Grichuk, which has taken away some of that chaos running game, but it's still there. They're very alert, heads-up base runners. They play great defense, and, you know, it kind of all depends on the pitching, and right now three of our starters are on the injured list, and we expect them back soon. So, you know, everybody's keeping their fingers crossed for a big bounce back in the second half.
So what makes Torrey Lovello good at his job? I like the way that he communicates publicly, that's for sure. But what makes him good in your mind?
Well, I think he communicates to the players the same way. You know, you talked about old school baseball compared to new school. Torrey keeps talking about how much they love each other and have each other's back. My first manager in the big leagues was Frank Robinson. You'd have to hit 5 home runs in the game to get a smile out of Frank. You know, he didn't want to be your buddy. He didn't want to be your friend. He may love you. He may not love you. All he cared about was your performance on the field. And, you know, Torrey kind of understands that if you have a tough day, go 0-for-5, punch out a couple times and hit into a double play, that's when you really need your skipper to come over and put his arm around your shoulder and tell you it's going to be all right. But that's kind of the way the game is going.
Yeah, it is. If you don't have these days, Bob, if you're not that guy, you need at least one, maybe two of those guys on your staff, don't you? You need some touchy feely. You need some laughing. You need some fun guys. Like, do you need a mix of personalities? Tell me about the thought process of putting together a coaching staff. Like, does somebody have to be the red ass? Somebody have to be the good guy? Not that you necessarily do it intentionally, but you want a good mix of personalities, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you want your coaches to be very good at what they do, whether it's a hitting coach or a pitching coach or a base running instructor, whatever the case may happen to be. You want the best you can possibly get. But that being said, you need a sheriff. You need somebody who'll kind of keep things in line. You need a bench coach to kind of stay on top of the game moving forward because it happens so fast. And, you need somebody to be their friend. And, you kind of look around at the guys you played with, the guys you played against, and you know their personalities and how they fit together. And that's quite an art to put together a coaching staff. Sometimes you're just handed guys from the previous regime, and usually it takes a couple of years until you figure out whether they fit in or not.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the question right now about Craig Counsell, your former ball player, wondering if he's got enough of his own mix and wondering if this coaching staff has enough of its own mix. Because this Cubs team doesn't, I don't know, they look a little lifeless at this point. Bob, what do you see as you watch them play?
Well, of course, I'm not going to speak to Counts and his coaching staff.
Sure.
You know, I'm not sure of all the circumstances there. I just know that Craig Counts is a real good baseball guy, and he is going to figure things out, no doubt about it. It just seems like the Cubs, offensively, which is a big surprise because in the years I was here, that was what the Cubs were all about, you know, other than the Mark Pryor, Kerry Wood era and later on Zambrano. But they were always slugging. They were always hitting home runs. And this year, the offense just seems to be sputtering for the Cubs. One guy will get hot, and two guys will get cold. And then those two that were cold get hot, and five other guys go cold. It's just tough. It looks like it's just tough to sync everything up offensively.
Yeah, it is. And regardless of the coaching staff, and I don't know what it is, but I know that watching this team right now, you know what we played in the first segment? We played you from 2011 calling the Cubs a dead-ass team. We played, it's 13 years old, Bob, but it has not lost its relevance in this town.
This has been a dead-ass team.
2011, sir. 2011. And it was just like, we all think of it sometimes when we see a team that just, it doesn't seem to have a little life. That can happen to a ball club, can it?
Oh, sure it can, and it happens all the time. Even to this day, it happens to very good major league teams. They just kind of hit a lull in the season, and you know, unless you have the right guys, veteran players to help pull you out of that lull, it can last for a long time. And it's probably not the greatest words to use on the air there to reference a team, but you know, at the time, I was just as frustrated as a fan. You know, that's the thing. We sit up in press box and watch a game. The fans sit in the bleachers and watch the game, and it's completely different when you're down there in that dugout and guys are battling against the best in the game. And it's hard to stomach sometimes, but, you know, that's what makes us fans.
Yeah, no, it does. And I tell you what, that language works for us here at the radio station. If nowhere else. It's an interesting thing. Corbin Carroll, man, did you notice yesterday was four straight changeups to Corbin Carroll in his third time through the order? The way that pitchers are limited now, and like the way they freak out anytime they get the order for the third time, I get frustrated. I feel like they just tell pitchers, all right, just throw your best pitch. Just throw your best pitch. What happened to changing speeds? What happened to mixing it up and try to mess up with the timing? Instead of just coming back with four straight changeups to a guy like Carroll, who eventually just goes yard.
Which is really surprising for those of us who watch him every day. He's had a lot of problems with high fastballs. And, you know, to see him get those off-speed pitches, especially hittable off-speed pitches, you know, if you throw it off the edge of the outside corner down near the dirt, he might swing and miss it. But, man, that was a hanger right in the middle of the zone. And, you know, it's just the analytics of the game, all the computer printouts we have, all the video work that the coaches do before the ball game. I think sometimes we overthink the game. I mean, I think back to my managing days, if I went out to take Curt Schilling or Randy Johnson out of the game so they didn't have to face a hitter for the third time, we'd probably still be out there fighting.
Yeah, but it all goes together, right, with this idea that you're better off with the reliever in the fifth or the sixth or the seventh and the eighth, and all, you're better off with this, like, endless cavalcade of relievers, and starters aren't even trained to hold stuff back and have something special for the third time through, or let alone the fourth time through.
That's a really good point. I caught a guy named Mike Kruko, who broadcasts for the Giants now, does a tremendous job. And Mike was a four-pitch guy. All four of them were average at best, but he would usually save one. Like, he might throw a lot of fastballs, changeups, and sliders early in the game, and then the third time through the order, he'd start dropping curveballs on guys. You know, he would watch what guys did in their first couple of at-bats of the game and then adjust in the third at-bat. It was quite an art for a starting pitcher to be able to work his way through that lineup a third or fourth time, but it was expected. Nowadays, I don't think it's expected even at the minor league level. You know, they're so worried about monitoring pitch count and, yep, you know, not going over a certain number. And I think that's maybe a little overplayed in the game nowadays.
Yeah, I don't know how you put the toothpaste back in that tube. I really don't know. I want it to happen. Maybe you limit the roster. You know, you got five relievers. That's it. You know, I don't think the Players Association would go for that, but that's one thought on how to do it.
Well, scary thought is having that many, or, you know, the way we have it nowadays with all the relievers, and take away the three batter minimum rule. We'd be playing 6-hour games now. You know, it would be crazy.
Yeah.
You know, the way Tony La Russa used to manage a bullpen, you'd be playing all night long.
Yeah.
So, some of the things have changed for the better, some not so much.
Bob Brenly with us here on 670 The Score. All right, Bob, I like to do this with certain guests along the way. I call it your baseball bona fides. I got three questions for you, okay?
Okay.
All right, here's one. Who is one of your most favorite players in the game? could be from the past. Give me a player that you absolutely loved and why you loved them.
Well, this might shock you, but Craig Counsell.
Really?
You know, on that 2001 championship team, we had stars all over the field. Gonzo in left, Steve Finley in center, Reggie Sanders in right, Gracie at first base, Matt Williams at third. I mean, we had really good players. But if we didn't have Craig Counsell, I wouldn't have been able to do the things I did over the course of the season. We could plug him in at third, short, second. He volunteered to play first base if we needed him over there. And you could hit him lead off. You could hit him eighth. It didn't matter. And he was such a student of the game, he would question me all the time. And I loved that. And you could see early on he had a future in the big chair.
That's awesome. What is the best game you ever had a chance to see in person as a fan, Bob?
Wow. Man.
Yeah, right?
I've seen a few, so it's kind of hard to figure out. The best game. Probably that four-error game hitting the game-winning home run. It's kind of a race to four errors. I don't know if it gets much better than that.
No, maybe not. And then what's one thing you would change if you were a commissioner, Bob?
Well, I would suggest that all the general managers and team owners and managers, for that matter, look in the dictionary under uniform. I mean, our colors are Sedona red and desert sand, and we got guys wearing lime yellow shoes and orange shoes and pink sleeves. And I don't know. I just don't like the look of it. It just looks like a pickup game somewhere when guys are not dressed alike. I want to see everybody look alike in their uniform when they're playing the game.
There's something to be said for it. Then there's the All-Star game uniforms. I don't know what the hell those things were, Bob. A friend of mine said it looked like guys were crossing guards in the Applebee's parking lot.
Well, I don't mind them for the home run derby and the festivities pregame, but I think, like a lot of fans, I want to see my guy wearing his uniform. I want to see the uniform that I root for.
Yes. Hell yeah. And you're trying to, like, make people know what teams these guys are on. You're trying to promote. So go ahead and do it that way.
Sure.
Absolutely. All right, Bob, thank you so much. Yeah, you bring the guitar? You got a guitar in the hotel room on this trip?
Yeah, I always bring my guitar, sure.
God love you. What's the song that you're playing along with lately that you think you're sounding pretty good, at least in your headphones?
In my own head, I'm working on Aqualung.
Oh, yeah.
And Nobody's Fault But Mine by Led Zeppelin.
Hell yeah.
But mostly I just strum chords, you know. I got a setup so I can put my headphones on so nobody hears me, and I can play along to music, on my playlist, and it's entertaining, and I can entertain myself.
Sitting on a park bench, I'll come over and help you out.
All right, Matt.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate you.
Talk to you again.
All right, that's Bob Brenly. You see him in the hotel room, blasting along with Zeppelin, hanging
Jethro
around.
Jethro Tull with Bob Brenly. Yeah,
Jethro Tull and Led Zeppelin with Bob Brenly in the hotel room. I'm in. Let's go. Oh, very nice. Let's go and let's talk about these damn kids with their bright yellow shoes. That's right. What's Geraldo Perdomo doing over there at short? I'm gonna write a song about these fluorescent yellow arm sleeves. Can't do it. Take off your yellow arm sleeves. 670 The Score is where you are. Hear from a couple more Hall of Famers, and we'll check the lineups before we get out of here for Cubs pregame coming up in a little bit on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
I'm very thrilled. Like I said, elated to be on the ballot and ecstatic to get in. So it was a shock to me, to be honest with you, a little bit, but I made it, very fortunate, and, you know, this is a place that's very difficult to get in, and you don't get there alone, that's for sure.
That is Jim Leland, who has made the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, and will go in tonight, or this afternoon, I should say. That's a speech I would look forward to, and Jim Leland, we'll get to your calls, by the way. Got a couple of phone calls we'll get in, and we'll get you the lineups for the ball games today, as well as it is indeed Hit and Run on the Score and Cubs baseball. The Cubs take on the Diamondbacks this afternoon in the series finale from Wrigley. Pregame coverage starts at 12:45, first pitch at 1:20 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. Jim Leland was a guest on Inside the Clubhouse just after he had been elected to the Hall of Fame. Today's the induction. And he was talking with Bruce Levine and David Haugh about when he knew that he would be a big league manager.
You know, Bonds and Drabeck kind of stand out in Pittsburgh, obviously. Florida, you had Sheffield, you had Kevin Brown, you had Al Leiter. Colorado, this is kind of ironic. If Todd Helton gets in this year, he'll be joining Larry Walker and myself, two people with the Rockies at one time. So, you know, on and on and on. Detroit, of course, Miguel Cabrera, Magno Ordóñez, Placido Polanco, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer. I could go on and on and on. You know, I just been blessed to have so many great players. But, you know, in my heart, I feel just as good to have had the other players because it's all about one heartbeat and a team. And I think there is also a fine line between enough stars and one too many. So, you know, I think that I'm appreciative of all the players I ever had, and that includes the minor league players.
That's Leland on the best players he ever managed. Hell of a list right there. Here's the cut on him about when he knew he would be a manager.
Well, I don't know that I ever got that far, but I think what happened to me was I started out rookie league and A-ball and then to AA and then didn't do a good job, got sent back to A-ball, and then the next time I missed AA and they sent me to AAA. And when I got to AAA and started managing against guys like Lee, Tony La Russa, Jack McKeon, several others that, you know, managed the big leagues or were going to manage the big leagues, I felt like maybe I got a chance to be a coach. I still wasn't sure I was ever going to get a chance to manage, but I felt like, well, you know, if you can hold your own with these guys, maybe you at least got a chance to be a coach in the big leagues. Unfortunately, you know, Tony went to the White Sox in the middle of 1979 when he was at Des Moines and I was at Evansville. And a couple of years later, when he needed a third base coach, I believe Bobby Winkles went to the front office. Tony gave me the call, and that was the start. I've said this all along. Tony La Russa didn't make me a manager, but he definitely made me a major league manager.
That's pretty cool. And Jim Leland, supposedly an incredible third base coach, and then went on to be an incredible manager. The White Sox, at one point, had a baseball brain trust emerging of Dave Duncan, absolutely brilliant pitching coach, Tony La Russa, Hall of Famer, Jim Leland, Hall of Famer, Dave Dombrowski, impending Hall of Famer. They were all there working under Roland Hemond, and then Hawk Harrelson became the GM and fired the whole lot of them. All of them. Sent them on the way. Other than that, it was a good run for Hawk. White Sox, by the way, play against the Kansas City Royals today. Drew Thorpe going for the White Sox. He's a fun one. I like watching Drew Thorpe. Fam Sheets, Robert Vaughn, Jimenez, Eloy in that lineup again. Brooks Baldwin at second base, kid who looks 18. Is not 18, but boy, he looks 18 or perhaps 17. Nicky Lopez playing short today. Nick Senzel, the newbie, at third base. And Corey Lee is your catcher. The Cubs will play against the Diamondbacks today. It's Brandon Pfaadt, the righty, on the mound for Arizona. Shota Imanaga, the lefty, the all-star, on the mound for the Cubs. Cubs line up with Nico Horner and then Michael Busch. Seiya Suzuki is your designated hitter. Ian Happ, Christopher Morel at third base. Mike Tauchman out in the field playing right today. Dansby Swanson, your shortstop. Tomas Nito is your catcher. And Pete Crow Armstrong, your center fielder and your number nine hitter. To the phone lines we go. Desmond is on the south side. It is on 670 The Score. What's up, Desmond?
Hey, Spiegs. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday, sir.
Yeah. So finally broke down this year and paid the blood money to the Ricketts for the Marquee app. So finally been able to watch some Cubs baseball this year. And going through that run before the All-Star break, I felt like I couldn't even enjoy the games when they won because we saw what this team was before that and the losing streaks that they've been on. And watching the last out last night, I had a Dennis Green moment where it was very much, they are who we thought they were. And I'm just resigned at this point for them to hopefully sell and just try to improve for next year because this team just is not talented enough to make any type of run.
You know,
they have that winning streak early this year compared to last year. So we got that out of the way and we don't have that excuse to not sell that we saw last year in the failed wild card push. I really hope that we have some opportunities to build more prospects and talent in the farm system and maybe shine a little bit more light on how Jed just doesn't know how to spend the payroll that he has.
Thank you, Desmond. That's a rough, rough reality that that caller's living, and he's not alone. I think these two games have really broken a lot of people. They've really broken a lot of people, and that broke him last night. And I've noticed a change in the tone and the reaction and the tenor of Cub fans, even just today, when I really get a chance to be plugged into you folks on a Sunday morning, and it has felt very different. And I understand there's big picture questions of the way that the team is built. That run before the break of winning 8 out of 11, I think of what Greg Brown told me from the Pirates broadcast booth a couple weeks ago. I was talking to him, and he said, the structure of the game itself and the structure of the season means that even bad teams will go on a run. That even bad teams will go on a run, and things will look up. And you wonder if that 8 of 11 is just, you know, the dying gasp of a bad team going on a run. Because here we are, two games into the second half, and woof. It is also a much better team in the Arizona Diamondbacks, showing you for the second year in a row what a better team looks like. They play crisp. They play crisp defense. They run the bases well. They're aggressive. They've got a really communicative and emotive manager. Seems to work for them and works in the modern game. I think something's a bit rotten on this Cubs team. Something is amiss, and I have theories as to the humanity of it. And my theory, one of my theories, has been that this bunch knew they needed more help than they got. That these players knew they needed more help than they were given in the offseason. And what they were given was Shota, which is cool, and Michael Bush, which has turned out to be cool, but it was Bellinger just returning. There wasn't a lot more. And you, the fans, knew they needed more. I believe the players knew they needed more, too. And then as the season wore on, and in Jed's words, 2 weeks became four, became six, became eight, feel like they kept knowing they needed more. And they go on the field these days knowing they don't have enough, that they're not good enough. And I feel like I've seen that humanity play out where they get down and it's, oof, it doesn't feel like there's a chance to come back. Rough, rough, rough stuff. This is Walt in Deerfield on 670 The Score. Walt, good morning. Thanks for holding. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, sir. I've got a couple things on my mind. I don't know what time permitting, but the first and maybe the most important is, you want to try to equalize some of the apparent inequity between hitting and pitching. I was a coach for 20 years. I suggest you take the ball and increase the circumference 1/64th of an inch.
Hmm.
Just enough so when you throw the ball to the plate, you have a little more resistance, might slow it down, 1 or 2 mph, and all those just missed swings that the hitters hit, that 1/64th of an inch might just put that over the top to get a hit. They get this, they get that. And it wouldn't be something so cataclysmic that would hurt the pitcher's arm. It would hurt this. It would destroy the integrity of the game. You're just trying to tinker with it and make it a little bit more enjoyable. That's what I would start. I'd start with the 1/64th. Maybe you need a 1/32nd, but I'd start with a 1/64th and see if that would work.
That's interesting, Walt. Let me ask you, though, what would that do to pitchers in terms of their musculature, in terms of the physicality of it, in terms of their arms and their comfort level and all that? Any idea?
Yeah, I would not change the weight of the ball. Just make it a 1/64th of an inch bigger. So you don't want to put any more stress on the pitcher's arm. Yeah, but and just by doing that, you'd have just a hair more resistance to home plate. And also, again, you give the hitter just a little bit bigger target to try to swat. I try it in the minors. If it works, you can tinker with that even a little more. But as long as you don't increase the weight of the ball, you shouldn't be hurting any arms.
Thank you, Walt. Appreciate it. Man, people are scrambling and scuffling to find ways to fix the offensive inequity or the inequity between the offense and the pitching. I should say. Yeah, he wants to increase the size of the baseball. Had a wonderful moment yesterday in the afternoon on a glorious Chicago summer day. Took my boy out to the park over there in the South Loop. Brought the bucket of balls and a lighter aluminum bat for the young man. Have my wooden bat I got from Louisville Slugger, but he wanted to use the metal one. I think, you know what? He likes the way it sounds. He likes the way it sounds when it hits the ball.
I respect it.
And I've got a bunch of different balls in there. There's some hard balls. There's some wiffle balls, which can be a hoot. There's a bunch of T-balls. So it's like the hard ball, but it's just a little softer. And then there's some full-on rubber balls. There was even a tennis ball. So it's just a wide array of different effects. One of the T-balls was starting to fall apart, and he had a moment where he hit it, and it broke apart. He literally hit the cover off the ball. The cover was spinning around, windmilling in the air, and he said, "Daddy, look, look." And I allowed him to think that his power was so majestic that he hit the cover off the ball.
Just being a good dad, man.
Just letting him feel that, you know? And then at one point he hit a tennis ball, and that one got some distance, and it bounced, and it went behind a bush, and he's like, "It's gone, Daddy, you can't find it." And it was out of the park. Literally hit a tennis ball out of the park. I let him feel those things. He's not actually as good as that, but I let him feel it. I mean, and maybe it's because he's been such a competent call screener this year, working as the associate producer when he does. You know,
but I did a really good job of making sure we weren't talking to the crazies.
Yeah, well, yes, he's weeded out some of the crazies. Sometimes he weeds out people he shouldn't weed out, though.
That happens. That's okay. He's new. He's learning.
I know. He's got to check in. You got to check in every once in a while, because I like a couple of crazies. I'm good with crazies.
We have fun with some crazies.
Yes. But yes, Texter, I immediately thought of The Natural as well. He's never seen that movie. I need to show him The Natural. Some heavy stuff early on, but, you know, some wonderful stuff. And it's funny, I was reading about The Natural and thinking about The Natural. If anyone doesn't know, the book is a very different kind of vibe than the movie. In the book by Bernard Malamud, a really, really terrific novel, Roy Hobbs, you know, is a cipher for all sorts of different American ideas and sort of, you know, very important figureheads in the history of America. What Roy Hobbs represents is a much more layered kind of thing. I mean, I guess that stuff is in the movie as well. But what you need to know about the book, if you don't, spoiler alert, is that he strikes out at the end of the book. He does not hit a home run that magically destroys the lights and creates a fireworks effect and makes people weep with triumphant music that has been used for decades in inferior situations. That was a bit of Hollywood movie making and a big change to the end of the story. The novel is quite gorgeous and quite sad, actually. I'd recommend reading it. The only problem is you'd probably end up feeling like you do as a Cubs or a White Sox fan.
This has been a dead-ass team for the better part of 3 months to start this season.
Yeah, you know? I mean, imagine how you'd feel if you struck out in a moment like that. Texters are not happy with Walt's idea to add 1/64th of an inch to the baseball.
He's could have seen that one coming.
Well, you know? But I genuinely, I have no idea of the physics of that.
Right, that's what I was saying. Like, I have no idea how that impacts. It sounds like a good idea, but I have no idea.
Yeah.
Let's call Rob again.
You know, it goes back to Sean's text to me last night, about 10:30, maybe 11 o'clock. I'm sitting there watching The Bear with my wife, and I get the text. It says, "Baseball sucks, dude." And I thought, you know, look, I know he's a Cub fan. I know he's having a tough time this year, but baseball doesn't suck, Sean. The teams might. The season might for your particular team, but baseball does not suck. I'm sorry that it felt that way. I recommend that you take a 12-year-old out to the park and throw baseballs to him and let him hit the cover off one and see the face light up at that point. I recommend that. You can't have my 12-year-old, though.
I wouldn't dare.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd want to hang out with me for that long.
No. I don't know. He enjoys you on a Sunday morning. Thank you so much to Sean Sears for doing a great job producing the show. Thank you to our guests on the show today. Bob Brenly and Rob Friedman, the pitching ninja. Really enjoyed talking to both of them. Go back on the Odyssey app if you missed them. Fun interviews, fun conversations. Got baseball bona fides from both of them. Thank you to all the callers and all the texters for being here as part of Hit and Run on a Sunday morning into the Sunday afternoon. Cubs baseball is next. Back with you tomorrow with Parker and Spiegel. And remember, Tuesday, me and Danny live on the field at Wrigley before Cubs Brewers. Have a great day, everybody.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.